Hi, this is Karin Zissis of ASCOA Online. Studies show that women, despite being increasingly active in the workforce, bear the weight of tasks at home. In Latin America, women on average carry out as many as 8 or 9 hours of unpaid work per day. And that was without a pandemic, leading to layoffs and proving how vulnerable women's careers can be in times of crisis. But these difficult times can also present new possibilities, from being able to network with a CEO over Zoom to thinking about new business opportunities from home. My colleague, Luisa Lemmy, spoke with Monica Bauer of PepsiCo and Juliana de Feria of Think Olga about the pros and cons for women in pandemic times.
You're listening to Latin America in Focus.
Latinoamérica en Foco.
América Latina en Foco.
A podcast by America Society, Council of the Americas, on politics, economics, and culture in the region.
Monica Bauer and Juliana de Faria, thank you so much for participating in Latin America in Focus podcast with me today.
Thank you, Lou.
Thank you, Lou. Glad to be here.
So this is a topic that we're going to try to keep it objective because we could talk about this for hours. And you both are both very involved with, you know, women's equality and the advancement of women in the workforce in Latin America. Both of your works reflect that. I'm going to start with a data in the United States, just for us to bring this into the context. In the United States, women hit a milestone this year, right before the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic hit. As of February, women for the first time made up more than half of the non-agriculture labor force in the country. But with COVID, this progress went down the drain because women are losing jobs at a greater speed because of the pandemic. How does that compare to Latin America? What kind of advancements made by women in recent decades in the region are at most at risk because of this health crisis?
Okay, so thank you for the invitation and for the question. So yes, numbers look pretty different in Latin America. And yes, there has been progress made. It's very relevant to highlight that a lot of the progress that has been made in the previous decades has a direct implication on how the poverty gap has been closed in Latin America. That means that we have a confirmed hypothesis that whenever women start working, this reflects immediately into a decrease in poverty gaps in the region. So there is advancement. However, if you think, for example, about senior roles, we still have in LATAM 20% of women in charge of senior leadership roles. That it's pretty low compared to numbers in the US and Europe. And there's still a lot of work to be done. Yes, women have been actively and more accelerated working so far. However, we do need to highlight the impact of the pandemic here in Brazil, Mexico, and the rest of Latin America. So I would just like to highlight a couple of things. No, so we have to understand that this pandemic has really demonstrated that women are much more vulnerable than the rest of the population. So the complexity comes simply because it's twofold. First of all, women have an additional burden. As we all know, in Latin America, women do more than 75% of the total of unpaid work. That is huge if we compare this number with other countries. This is approximately 8 to 9 hours of unpaid work per day led by women. But then if you, you add that new shift of now having the kids at home and then maybe even have to teach them, it makes this very complex. But the other thing, and just answering your question, is specifically how are we now more vulnerable from an economic perspective? So what happens is that even if we have advancements and we have increased the percentage of women working in the region, the sectors where females are represented in the region are unfortunately the ones that are having and will continue having a negative impact. So I'm speaking specifically about four sectors. So in these four sectors, 78% of the region's working women are concentrated, and those are social services, wholesale, retail trade, and business services and transportations. So if you think about this and services in general, tourism, etc., those are the ones that have been more hit. I would also highlight traditional trade, the informal market that has an overrepresentation of women. So just making the point that unfortunately, even if there is advancement in the region, we have to bear in mind that the sectors where women have now increase their participations are the ones that are now more vulnerable with the pandemic.
I absolutely second that. I don't want to be the Debbie Downer. Of course, there has been accomplishment and good news. But in Brazil, even before the pandemic, progress towards gender equality has been uneven. So the sexism in corporate world has been holding women back. And because of it, finding a job is much tougher for women than it is for men. So women in Brazil, they are finding solutions through it, even working finding jobs in informal work, or even finding solutions in small entrepreneurship, or even accepting low-paid jobs. So what is happening here is now that we have almost 50% of Black women in Brazil working in informal markets. The context, it was not good enough, and it was bad, actually. And COVID-19 is aggravating the problem. It's not changing the situation. It's just highlighting what was bad already.
Yeah, like everything that you both have been saying, you know, goes back to what experts have been affirming lately, that COVID-19 can set women back a whole generation. Because of these effects on women in the workforce, those sectors that Monica mentioned, and those preconditions that Juliana, you just talked about. So that goes for women performing highly skilled jobs, as well as women in informal sectors. Why are they so damaging to gender equality? Why is this so long lasting? Maybe Juliana, you can talk a little bit about these effects in Brazil and the need to see the pandemic with a gender lens. Mm-hmm. How do these effects arrive in the context of gender parity?
Mm-hmm. We absolutely know that COVID-19 is influencing everyone. But as Monica said, we have to understand that minority groups are going to be we are going to live through deeper and more intense consequences of the COVID, especially women and especially Black people. Just so we understand a little bit about what is happening to women in Brazil, I think the first thing is we have to talk about domestic violence. It's something that is happening everywhere, that has been quarantined in Brazil. Also is facing the rise of cases of domestic violence. In Rio de Janeiro, in the two first weeks of quarantine, we have seen 50% more denounces of domestic violence. And these women, they are in their own home and they are trying to work from home. How can they do that? So it's something that we have to look upon and understand that it's something that is also holding women back when we're talking about work. It's not only that, of course, but I think is there is this provocation because we have to provoke corporative world because they don't think that domestic violence is something that they have to deal with, but they do. It's something that could always be invisible to them. It's something that they didn't have to deal with it. It's something that is personal and it's happening in your own homes. But now their female employees are working from home and they are suffering from that. So how can we work that out? The corporate world, they are part of society, and they also have to, they have the responsibility as well to work for a healthy society. And I think the pandemic is also shedding a light in this situation.
Women, as you said, Monica, take a much heavier burden when it comes to taking care of children and the elderly. So what does that mean when you think about strategies? There have been pledges from the private sector to adapt a little bit their benefits to working parents. Governments have been trying different strategies for stimulus for the economy. But, you know, what kind of specific strategies and things that can be implemented right now that would, let's say, make this hit on women a weaker blow?
Yeah. So, I mean, from a macro perspective and a government perspective, I'm of course not an expert, but some of the things that are relevant and out there as recommendations to make sure are implemented, it's first of all, this, as you mentioned, gender lens to the pandemic from a macro level, from a public perspective. And that would really imply making sure that from a legal perspective, women, even with the shutdown and the lockdowns, have channels available to protect themselves from domestic violence. Second, the health system that you well mentioned. You know, telemedicine is a component that should be further explored, and the access to health that is now lacking, especially because people are even afraid of going to the hospitals. And thirdly, of course, the economic recovery. It's very relevant. Credits, loans, stimulus, specifically to those very vulnerable sectors at this point. From a private perspective, and specifically from a PepsiCo one, I would first share with you that for PepsiCo, diversity has been part of our DNA for a while. For a long time. So specifically for women, we've had extended maternity leave policies. We have a very robust flexibility program for women and for men. We established years back paternity leaves as well, because actually if you want to somehow break that huge amount of hours of unpaid work in the hands of women, you also have to provide access to men to be part of that. So paternity leaves are critical. And I think at this point, it's not PepsiCo, but it's rather the world that will now understand that flexibility and remote working can be extremely productive. So I think there's an opportunity, and I'm very optimistic on shaping some additional policies by companies that maybe didn't believe in this as an effective way to work. And we know that distance or remote learning, it's critical to many women who simply have too much on stake and wouldn't be able to work otherwise. In addition to that, we do have a proactive strategy to support the pandemic, right? So we have a response from a citizenship perspective to support vulnerable populations. So what we did first was supporting the communities with a grant of almost $7 million in the region. This has been a very large grant provided by the Global PepsiCo Foundation. And it is targeted to supporting nutrition for vulnerable children and their families. So nutrition, it's a big issue now. It's maybe not that visible there because we have all the other factors. But if we think about our region, about Mexico, Brazil, but of course Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, Colombia, and many of our markets in Latin America, many children and many families depend on either NGOs or governmental programs to get part of their daily nutrition. So specifically in the case of children, many of them receive either breakfast and lunch in schools. So with schools mm-hmm. shut down, people and especially children have really diminished the level of nutrition and especially of protein in their diets. And this could really lead to a very strong undernourishment problem in the near future. So mostly this grant that I'm talking about is really focused on supporting nutrition for these vulnerable both families and specifically children. I think the most important part where the private initiative should play an active role moving forward is in the economic recovery. So as we were mentioning, women are overrepresented in the traditional trade sector in Latin America. By that, I mean mom and pop stores, the small traditional stores. Many of them have simply couldn't survive with the lockdowns. Mm-hmm. And we know that that part of the economy in every single one of our markets, it's key to reactivating economic growth. So it's key from a macro perspective, but it's also key from a gender perspective.
In your book, you talk about strategies for women to adopt in these different sectors. You're talking about the people who are being mostly hit right now, this real economy, the mom and pop shop. But we know that this has climbed the corporate ladder all the way. How does that change now? Like the strategies. Let's say if you had to name one single policy that companies should adopt or that governments should adopt right now to help women stay in the workforce, how does COVID change what you were recommending in your book that was published before the pandemic hit?
So our book, that it's called The Power of Empowerment, Women Building Latin America, basically covers through 12 rules, four very large planks and recommendations. So one of them is the use and understanding of power that is not necessarily organic to Latin American women. We weren't raised by understanding that we have the power and we have the right to use it. So that's a big chunk of it. The second one is the power and the need of self-promotion. Again, back to our roots, we usually stay silent and that doesn't help in terms of self-promotion. The third piece, it's the power of networking and the need of a solid network for you to really strive in the workforce in any single level, if you're an entrepreneur or if you're a senior manager in a company. And the fourth is exploring some tactics for health, for self-care. So I think that we've been presenting and speaking about the book, actually deploying and running some workshops for different audiences. And I would say that the four planks are still are there and shouldn't be tailored. I mean, they're spot on. What I would say is the most important one at this point is self-care because of what you mentioned. So if you think about that triple burden and triple shifts of work that we're now having, the need of self-care, it's dramatic. So by self-care, that doesn't only mean that you really have to have the power to focus and get some time for yourself, because that might sound naive, but really to also apply some tactics. First of all, to be able to say no to additional workloads that you might be getting. But very importantly, what we cover in that chapter, it's also how some tactics to really make sure that you run a strategy against sabotage. Because if we think about domestic violence, if we think about the normalization of violence in this region, it starts everywhere. So you don't have to go to the limits of violence. When you are in a meeting and someone comes and interrupts you and that just makes his word count, that's violence, right? So what we address in the book, it's some very specific tactics where you first of all need to be very conscious and be agile in detecting where there's marginalization and sabotage happening, and then just activate some specific tactics to make sure that that stops. So that part, and in general, the need of self-care with the pandemic, it's dramatic. That is from a very individual standpoint. Of course, again, companies need to do their part with strategies and policies such as the ones I already mentioned.
Juliana, when we talk about self-care and on those strategies, that changes when we talk about the women that you were focusing on your previous answer, Black women, mm-hmm. people in the informal market, minorities, people who are mm-hmm. struggling even before this pandemic. and might mm-hmm. not be included in a corporate context. What does that mean for them? What would be the mm-hmm. strategy? And if you could talk about one thing that governments could do to include these women that mm-hmm. a lot of the times are doing, you mentioned on Think Olga report, economía do cuidado, the economy of taking care of other people.
Also in Brazil, unfortunately, we have the number of 13 million people who live below the poverty line. And majority of these people are Black women. They are head of their families. We have seen here in Brazil the minimum wage that is being given to this family. Single mothers are also receiving the value of the minimum wage is double for them, understanding that women are majority of the heads of the family. But what is happening is that it's not enough, because we understand that these women are being suffocated by the unpaid care work. That's what you said in the beginning. And it's important for us to remember that this unpaid care work is the subsidy for the economy, because without it, the world as we know it wouldn't be viable. And when an enterprise hires someone, it's because that someone was ready to join society and because someone took care of this person. And so this is absolutely important. And we have a data that 13% of global GDP could be corresponded of this unpaid care work. And what is happening here in Brazil, I think everywhere, but I'm talking with a Brazil lenses, is that women are being, in the moment that all the families, the schools are shut down and all the families are inside their houses, they are being responsible for that 24/7. And we have seen now in Brazil that 8 million people have lost their jobs, and of that 5 million were women. Not only because they are like the fragile link, but some of them are also quitting because they cannot deal with the housework, this invisible work, and the work from the enterprises and the corporate world. So
we're talking about from 8 million people in Brazil who lost their jobs, 5 million are women?
Exactly. Wow. We as women, we are the weakest link. And moms, we're all moms, so we understand that, how fragile are our positions in the corporate world. So that's what I was going to say a little bit about communal care as well. There are a lot of things that can be done, but I think if we can tackle this subject of this invisible work, it's something that would be really, really important for us to understand that it cannot be a gender-based problem. This work should be done by everybody and should be divided in a more honest way. I can see that in my house. It's just an example. It's something that we talk about all the time in our organizations, but my husband, it's like nothing has happened. It's like he's not living through a pandemic with a kid. Why not? Why they are not talking about? Is this expected for me to take care of everything? I think it is. So it's time for us to talk about this issue.
Yeah. I think that this is a great segue for us to kind of go through the third part, which I wanted to talk about solutions and opportunities, really. What are the opportunities that we have here in the middle of this crisis to deal with these structural problems, to deal with the context of, as you said, Juliana, some employers not understanding that the burden is with women, or women having to let go of their jobs because they're taking care of the children, and this is not really affecting their husbands as much as is affecting them, perhaps. So, Monica, I also wanted to ask you about, like, you know, we were talking about the strategies are the same, but let's think about a young woman seeking to build her career. Maybe she's just out of school or college or even a master's. You know, maybe they're in their first job, and they can't really network in the same way. They are, you know, at home. They're not really dealing with, you know, the vibe in the office. And they're seeing friends getting laid off. Maybe they are getting laid off themselves. What piece of advice would you give to young women trying to build an enterprise, trying to start a career under these conditions, or women who were planning to open a business this year? Can we talk about how we can take the advantage in a way, since women are so creative and we definitely balance all those plates all together for so many generations? How can we make the best lemonade of this crisis and try to advance?
Yeah, no, definitely. Within every crisis, there's an opportunity. I fully agree, Lou. And I mean, first of all, on the first piece of your question, yes, the organic and regular way of networking, of going to lunch, of seeing people when you're traveling, that's going to be off for a while. However, many people, many senior leaders who you wouldn't normally have access to simply because those people are so, so busy and, again, traveling all the way, they have time now. So I think that there's this biased belief that you're not going to be able to network, but you will be able to network. And this is something that Paula, my co-author, the CEO of PepsiCo Latam, and I have been making the point for, because, I mean, me personally, I've been able to be much closer to senior leaders during the pandemic than without the pandemic. Because every time I look for them, they have time. And I Zoom for 30 minutes or even 1 hour, and I ask those key stakeholders to join me in meetings and to see what we're doing. So I think it's just, let's be creative. But you can network. You can take advantage of, actually, even if you work in a very hierarchical organization, have a bigger opportunity of making your point, of being visible, simply because if you think of, again, back to Zoom, you have little squares and everyone owns one square and it's the same size and you have the same volume of voice for through the laptop. And that sounds silly, but it's not. Take advantage of us now being all equally hit by the pandemic and just raise your voice and be proactive in all this networking. Secondly, as you said, there's always opportunities. Yesterday, Paula and I were running actually a workshop of the book with the beneficiaries of a program we call Women with Purpose. And it's just amazing to see women getting creative all the way and then just doing and taking opportunities of what's happening. So if you think about homeschooling, there's a huge opportunity for homeschooling. So teachers, tutors, online classes, if you think about furniture, all the people are starting to need furnitures for either home office or homeschooling. So there's always a way to find opportunities. I'm just not minimizing the impact of the pandemic. We unfortunately know, and just heard Juliana, no, it's dramatic to see the number of layoffs and to see that focus on women being more laid off than men. So it is a crisis. However, if you are part of a company or if you're an entrepreneur, I think we have to be creative and find the ways to support ourselves, but really to get into those opportunities, small or big, during the crisis. The second thing I would call out is the need for the business sector to really have a very active stake here. So in our case as PepsiCo, and this is something that Juliana might have heard of because we're doing it everywhere, and it's not only PepsiCo, but it's rather the industry, is supporting traditional sales channels. So we have been launching initiatives all across Latin America to ensure that we support small businesses so they can continue operating. So if you think about the need for just a number, no, 80% of stores started as family business, and 10 million out of all the mom and pop stores in Latin America, from those 10 million, 60% are women. So if you think not only about the hit on women, but especially if you think about how women in particular reinvest all their salary into their families, you also have a very important social issue. 90% of the income of women goes back to their families in the form of medicine, of clothing, education, and health. So if you don't get that income, you also have an additional, like, very complex social problem. But that said, what we're doing to support those mom and pop stores, it's really by first teaching them some health and safety protocols and supporting them with key materials to really have the face shields or even the shields in the stores to be able to operate, but in a safely manner. We have been also providing relevant information and creating actually websites for them to understand the regulation. Regulation, and Juliana will be here with me, but it's just changing by the minute. In some cases, it's a federal thing. In some others, it's a state regulation. And in many others, it's even a municipal regulation.
Yeah, Juliana, I think Olga has been publishing some things as a new initiative called the Future Lab, right? So It's like, it's basically a lot of women participating in video calls and kind of explaining what could it be? What could it be the future that we could have after all this? Monica is giving very clear examples of like what companies can do, how women have to access more technology, right? Like the education in Latin America, is not the same as the digital education that it's kind of happening here in the United States. What would be the opportunities for you?
Mm-hmm. This is a great question. And from a nonprofit point of view, I think the greatest opportunity that we have now is to go through a humanitarian crisis and also get data that correspond to gender and race. So we can have information of how minority groups are going through the crisis in a different way of a white heterosexual man. So I think for us, this is the most important thing. So we can understand what is really happening, and we can draw, or even literally draw the future that we want. Without this data, we cannot really understand how minorities are being treated, or what is happening, or what will happen to these minorities. And we always have to work with data from the past. So for an example, we wrote in the beginning of the quarantine, we wrote a report that were just trying to understand to what future we were going towards if nothing was going to be done regarding gender issues. And we used data from the Ebola epidemic in African countries. So we weren't sure of what was going to happen, but we had an idea because it happened in the past. So the report was most like a warning that we are going to head to this topic future if nothing is going to be done. And unfortunately, what we are seeing at the moment is that we are at the beginning of the dystopic future. Most of the things that we were just imagining that could happen for women and Black people is happening. They are already happening. So I think the opportunity now is that we understand this data and imagine the future that we want to get, that we want to live on. And that's a little bit, I don't know if I can explain it, about the communal care is when we try to understand how we together can address this future and how we can get there. So thinking about a little bit the corporate world, I think one of the things is that diversity is now, it was on the table before, but I think now it's super, super important. So what we are feeling is that more doors are being open to this diversity issue. We are seeing some bad news, like I said, that more women are being laid off, but also that these directors, these companies, they also want to talk about it. They want to understand what is happening, why it's happening. So that's why it's so important for us to have this data. So it's very crystal clear, very concrete in front of us. What is the problem and how we can get a solution for it? The first step is understanding the problem. So I think although I would trade everything for not to go through a pandemic, but we are living through a pandemic. And if we can understand the problems that it's bringing to minorities, just, it's a great first step. And I think we are doing the job.
That's great. I really would like to thank you both again. This was super interesting. We could talk about that for 2 more hours. and thank you so much, Monica and Juliana, for both of your time. I really appreciate it and hope we can continue talking about, you know, maybe using this pandemic not just to learn lessons and highlight injustices and inequalities, but also taking opportunities to advance women in the workforce in the region.
Thank you so much for the invitation, and count with us to again accelerate this journey and make sure that we focus and really reinforce the need of a gender focus of the pandemic in Latin America.
Thank you so much, Lou. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Karin Zissis. This podcast was produced by Luisa Lemmy. Find out more about ASCOA's Women's Hemispheric Network at as-coa.org/women. The music in this podcast was recorded at America Society in New York City. Check out concerts online at musicoftheamericas.org. We hope you enjoyed this episode. You can help us spread the word. Give us 5 stars, write a review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.